This is Susan Livingston reporting for Sequitur for Expressions of Peace Radio. Expressions of Peace, personal, powerful, and heart-to-heart. Sequitur is archived under the Expressions of Peace tab at panina.org. That's P-A-N-I-N-A, as in peace and nonviolence in action. With habitat loss, ecological collapse, and consequent impending extinction as its main themes, Sequitur is a discussion of the natural consequences of actions at the individual, community, cultural, and species levels. Sequitur, it follows. Sequitur, the theme song, is by Zympht. That's Z-Y-M-P-H-T. You can find more of his music on SoundCloud. Sequitur evolved from the Global Extreme Weather segment on Extinction Radio, which was conceived as a project of the Near-Term Human Extinction Support Group on Facebook. Sequitur's purpose is to provide witness to extinction events and their drivers for the whole web of life, not just to extreme weather events and natural disasters, and not just when they involve property destruction and loss of human life or monetized livelihood. Aho, Mitakwe Oasin, we are all related. El Día de los Muertos is the time when the veil between the mundane world and the spirit world is at its thinnest. The spirits can more easily walk among the living, and the living can more easily evoke the presence of the spirits of the ancestors and other beloved departed, and provoke the presence of unquiet, hostile, or adversarial spirits. It is a paradoxical time of both celebration and dread of mortality. As Peter Melton reminded us last time on the Oneness Show, we all get to die. Throughout the history of literature, the immortals have envied us this privilege, for it is the origin of our finest qualities, such as love, respect, generosity, and compassion, as we recognize our oneness and our connection with nature. And yet mortality is the only separation that is no illusion, and thus the origin of fear and greed as we cling to each other and to our worldly paradise. Perhaps it is true that all of our fears and anxieties ultimately arise from the fear of death, and that the ultimate spiritual quest is the quest for the grace to let go, whether of a relationship or a habitat. We have neglected that spiritual quest and instead attempted to deal with our fear by hardening our hearts, garrisoning our energy in our heads, clinging to our loved ones, fighting climate change instead of accepting and adapting to the consequences of our actions, and generally creating a culture of conquest of each other and the natural world.
Hee-haw! It's Benjamin the Donkey. You know, life beat me up. I was sore and found day-to-day living a chore. I detached somehow and feel much better now, 'cause I don't give a fuck anymore. Detachment is how I stay sane on our swirling trip down the drain. It reduces the strain that would freak out my brain, and it really helps me maintain. Hee-haw!
I stand with the great 19th century poet Alfred Lord Tennyson, who said, "'Tis better to have loved and lost than never to have loved at all, whether a beloved individual lost to death, a beautiful sunset lost to the motion of the planet, or a whole species lost to extinction." I see our current state of spiritual bankruptcy that has led to our willingness to monetize the necessities of life, such as food, water, shelter, air, and the land on which these depend, our exploitation of those we view as other, and our wanton destruction of our own habitat as the direct consequences of nature deficit disorder, and also as nature deficit disorder's most troubling symptom. A hardened heart is impervious to grace. So don't let your grief for the state of the world make you harden your heart against its beauty. Peter Melton co-wrote a song, How Beautiful the World Is, together with Susan Dobra and John Michael Sun. If you are willing, take a deep breath and focus your attention for 3 minutes and 40 seconds on this performance by John Michael Sun.
¶¶ How lucky I am to be alive. I see redwood trees and mountains, flowing rivers to the sea. I see the same beauty in the eyes of you and me. Can't believe how wonderful the world is. How grateful I am to be alive. But Mother Earth is crying, can you taste her tears? Future generations are depending on us here. 'Cause I can see how fragile the world is. Winds are blowing, storms are brewing, ice is melting, oceans rising, nature's calling, trees are falling, birds are dying, the earth is crying. Can't believe how bountiful the world is, how awesome it is to be alive. But the way we've been living, we take more than our share. I don't know what we're thinking, if we're thinking that we care. I know the times are scary, but there's a feeling in my bones that we can work together to make this place our home. Let me be how beautiful the world is. A peaceful planet, let's grow with it, make it flower, solar power, water flowing, gardens growing, people blowing, let's get going. Lucky we are to be alive. But our grandchildren are crying, I can hear them weep. If we don't make some changes, what we sow is what they'll reap. Let them see how beautiful the world is. Let us be how beautiful the world is. See how beautiful the world can be.
I'm so grateful to Peter Melton for this support in holding the paradox of celebrating my love for the earth even as I mourn her dying. We'll be hearing more from Peter on the topic of paradox in future shows. The Agony of Gaia is a three-dimensional work of art created by Jeff Chapman Crane. You can see her as the featured image on the Facebook announcement for this podcast if you type Sequitur Mortality in the search bar. She was lying on her table in the lobby of the building in Wise County, Virginia, where I was to testify before the State Senate Budget Committee about the threat posed by Dominion Power's proposed coal-fired power plant to some 20 species of mussels in a river that would have to be rerouted to accommodate the toxic waste storage from the project. Her feet were closest to the door, and when I glanced her way, I didn't realize what I was looking at. I thought some children had left their toy trucks on a sand table. It wasn't until I reached the level of her hips that I got my first glimpse of her face. I will never forget that moment. Around her base is inscribed Jeff Chapman Crane's poem, The Unreclaimed, which I will read for you now. Only the clarion cry of woodland bird, the trickling song of mountain stream should fill the silence here. Stately oaks should crown this noble queen. Here sleek fox and graceful doe should raise their young, squirrel and chipmunk find a home. Only the dance of dying leaf, the burgeoning thrust of budding tree should mark time's passage here. But no, lust would never have it so. The deadly drone of diesel engines, steel machines to cut and slash, assail this fertile motherland, leave behind no unturned stone. Stripped to the bone and ripped apart, she grieves. Her heart is left to die alone. Only the flesh of fallen trees, the bone-gray mounds of granite stones, only the stagnant blood of mud-choked mountain streams to tell the tale remain. But no, her seeds are left for us to sow. The earth lies unreclaimed.
We, the citizens of the United States of America, are not graceful people, especially during election season. Even the democratic process, the design of which was intended to support love, has been put in service to fear. I remember a line from the Swami Beyondananda last time on the Oneness show. He said that our political conversation has degenerated to, so, who are you voting against? But my colleague Lisa White did not hide behind humor to make this point in her segment from last week's Extinction Radio. Here's a brief excerpt from that segment used with her permission.
This is Lisa White.
Welcome to Sequitur, Lisa.
When we don't have the courage to come to understanding with people and to dig deeper into our stories or into an event to try to see the greater purpose and meaning behind it, we can end up projecting fear into our culture. Case in point, the U.S. election. With what's happening right now, it's election based on fear. And it's the fear of not having enough. It's the fear of losing that which we've become accustomed to. It's the fear of trying to step outside of a box that's crumbling and maybe deciding to vote a third option. And fear is going to win this election. I don't care who you vote for, fear is winning this election this year. And so I want you to really take that in, because to me, that's a universal truth. We are voting fear, whether it's for Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton, and we will have to suffer the consequences of that. And so, unfortunately, some of the consequences probably won't feel so good and will instill fear. And this is why I feel this conversation is so important to have right now, is how are we going to manage consequences of this election? Because either candidate will have consequences, and we need to face up to that with courage and compassion and see the wounds in both of these candidates as wounds in ourselves and our society that need to be healed. This is probably one of the most important times in our history to have the courage to go deep and do deep inner work and then look at those places within yourself that you might be projecting onto Trump or Clinton and see that we all share common wounds and fears and joys and pain, and how can we come together and look at these things within ourselves to help on a greater collective level neutralize some of the consequences and or alleviate some of the damage that our choices will bring. And when we heal something in ourselves, energetically we're healing it in a greater whole. And so deep inner work is so important. It's so important to look at our shadow and the parts of ourselves that we might not be so proud of, or that we're afraid of, or that we're ashamed of, or that we don't put into the world that could be healing forces that for some reason we didn't have enough confidence or courage to do. I hope this discussion has been helping us connect and finding the courage to find more compassion toward one another. So if you'd like to discuss this further, you can always reach me at my website, www.walkinthemud.com. And until next time, look at your fears and see how you can find the courage to go deep into yourself and look at someone else and their story and find a way to find our common humanity and connect. Until next time, be well.
Thank you, Lisa. I always look forward to your heartfelt sharing. Another aspect of the grace to let go is letting go of the anger, resentment, or desire for vengeance that characterizes the wounds of cultural oppression. I don't like to call this forgiveness because people confuse this deep inner work with superficial social remedies such as apology, punishment, or reparation. These work poorly enough on the individual level. Their ineffectiveness in addressing cultural oppression is legendary. And further, as Zhiwa Woodbury so poignantly says, the oppressors either suffer the flip side, which is guilt, shame, and remorse, or they harden their hearts to avoid connecting with these emotional consequences and working through them to invite that change of heart that comes with the grace to let go. It is in this sense that the only real forgiveness is self-forgiveness. I attended an ancestor vigil Friday night in which we honored not only our own beloved who died in the past year, but also those who died from persecution at the hands of the Inquisition during the burning times, and even today, for the crime of practicing plant medicine, or suspicion of witchcraft, or just for being female, since the majority of practitioners were and still are women. It was an exercise in oneness, in holding paradox, since I am sure I had ancestors among both the oppressed and the oppressors. The same can be said of the Holocaust. I'm sure I had ancestors who were Jews and ancestors who were Nazis. And a parallel could be drawn with the lynching of people of color at the hands of vigilante justice during the slave times, and even today, as the Black Lives Matter movement so vividly reminds us. Even when transgressions are separated in time and space from the letting go and from the person who is doing the releasing, healing happens, and it happens from within. Queen Reverend Mutima Imani wrote a poem in response to The Burden of the Chains, a lecture at UC Berkeley about the people who worked to abolish slavery. Her poem is titled Releasing the Burden of the Chains. I filmed her reading her poem for Expressions of Peace TV 4 years ago in the Peace Park in the heart of Berkeley, California.
I forgive you, America, my brother, who has fallen in sin out of grace. I refuse to bear my egg to seed your ugly ways. I refuse to give birth to the conditions we live in, the pain of this culture of violence. And I bring the good news. I forgive you. Now get off my back. I am releasing the burden of the chains, and I take back my power. My intentions and my prayers stop you in your tracks, exposing your contradictions and mine. I am free. I am free. We are free. I have released the burden of the chains, and I hold a new vision. One that includes everyone freed from the illusions of democracy, healed from the pain of the past.
Aho. Thank you, Mutima. Zhiwa Woodbury points to the bombing of Hiroshima 71 years ago as the pivotal event that at once clinched the role of the USA as the dominant imperialists of the world, and more importantly, declared humanity's triumph over life itself, ushering in what has come to be called the Anthropocene era. One of the fathers of the atomic age, Julius Robert Oppenheimer, a professor of physics at UC Berkeley, later described the profundity of this event with a quote from the Bhagavad Gita, "Now I am become death, the destroyer of worlds." I have a final expression of peace from one of the last remaining survivors of that bombing. Listen as Takashi Tanimori describes his transformation from a samurai warrior seeking to avenge the death of his father to a peace activist.
Bloodline of samurai. The young doctor found out I was a survivor of Hiroshima.
So they put me in a mental institution. Each face I saw, the white face, I was ready to use my judo to just kill. Spinal taps, electrical shock treatment.
I felt I must take the revenge upon the American. As I experienced the suffering, the hunger, the naked, the loneliness, I want American children to experience
But there was a Mary, just white, American nurse. She locked the door, she put her keys way in the bottom of the pocket of the uniform. She sat next to me on the bed. And she took my hand, Barbara, just like this. She took my hand. First time ever, grown-ups, let alone Americans, the moment she touched my hand, oh, I never experienced even to this day such warmth, tenderness, strength.
Takashi-san was honored earlier this month at the 3rd annual White House Student Film Festival, where a documentary film featuring his story by 17-year-old Jason Cordes was among the top 3 finalists. Their photo at the South by South Lawn event is the featured image on the blog page for this show at panina.org. Congratulations, Takashi. In short, El Día de los Muertos is the time to remember that we are one. In the words of Pakvilai Sudhaswin, we all have the same pain and the same joy. We are not different. Or as my shamanic mentor Star Wolf likes to say, the dark and the light, they're the same.
The destination of this train is Brain 3.
You are listening to Sequitur on Expressions of Peace, personal, powerful, and heart-to-heart, archived at panina.org. That's P-A-N-I-N-A, as in peace and nonviolence in action. Speaking of shamanism, I am hosting an event on 4 November in the community room at Arrowhead Apartments in Asheville, North Carolina. For details, go to Facebook, type Pachamama in the search bar, and select Pachamama's 20th Anniversary Annual Gathering, Screening. The event will be filmed live at Fort Mason in San Francisco the night before. I attended this event in person 2 years ago and was deeply moved to share space and breath with a representative of one of the last remaining non-industrialized cultures of our planet. People who do not suffer from nature deficit disorder, who honor Mother Gaia in the way they conduct their lives, who study and act upon ways of knowing that Western science dismisses, such as insights that come in the dream time. 5 months later, I trained with the Pachamama Alliance to facilitate their Awakening the Dreamer, Changing the Dream symposium. You can probably guess that we are the dreamers, and that the cultures of the Amazon rainforest are severely threatened by the spread of industrial civilization.
You know, some say the bad things we do kill nature. It might not pull through. To deal with the guilt, I say that's how we're built, and we're part of nature, too. Behavior that's not up to par did not cause this mass au revoir. We're still just a niche in nature's world, which evolved us to be what we are. Our world is about to combust for reasons we might think unjust. Nature's causal chain helps to explain why the universe moves as it must. Yeehaw!
A native North American wisdom keeper of my acquaintance is running for mayor of Berkeley, California. His name is Running Wolf, and he has taken on a small part of Changing the Dream with his annual 4-day Stop Driving Global Warming campaign. His campaign started with a different sort of run, a 5,000-mile cross-country run to rally support for the Free Mamaya campaign. That run started in San Francisco on Saturday, May 19, 2001, and ended on Friday, September 28, 2001, in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. He was in Akron, Ohio when the World Trade Center came down, and he suspended the run for a few days while watching the TV coverage over and over and realizing, as I did, 1,000 miles to his south, less than 3 months into my post-traumatic recovery from an attempt on my life, that there was something wrong with that picture. In his usual radically sarcastic style, Running Wolf described his arrival and participation in the action in a couple of Facebook messages. Quote, "I ran into the city of brotherly hate 2 weeks later, with Baby Bush at 91% approval ratings and AmeriKKK Klan flags everywhere. I had flown my Blackfeet brother, actor Steve Rivas, Dances with Wolves, Fargo, and others, out to run the last miles with me, and we ran the streets of Philadelphia with lacrosse sticks with the Mohawk warrior flag tied to it, chanting Free Mumia Abu Jamal. The Move family had to go on lockdown as the kids wanted to run with us, but it was too dangerous. People watched in silence as they knew they were witnessing the unusual. Nobody had crossed the color lines until a red man ran for a black man on death row. When I came back to the bay, I was allowed to lay the medicine wheel on the ground for the first time since the wagon trains crossed the plains, and my ancestors, the Ascani Picuni, or Blackfeet, saw that the whites had taken the wheel off the ground. If you go outside, you will see all the wheels off the ground. That is our problem, so just slow down. We are in the curse of the wheel. Close quote. This was the conception of the stop driving 4-day boycott of personal car use. So even if you can't support Running Wolf's political aspirations with your vote, and especially if you have lost faith in the usual means of protesting endless wars for resources and brutal energy resource extraction practices, take back the date and take the courageous stand of not driving for 4 days, starting on September 11th each year. Personally, I stopped driving altogether in March of 2011, so to honor Running Wolf's annual event, I take it to the next level and declare a 4-day in-house retreat so that I am not employing on-demand vehicular mobility of any kind at that time. That you have to work is not an acceptable excuse. If you can't find a different way to get to work or work from home, then claim a religious accommodation, which isn't really a lie since our Mother Earth is a sacred living being who urgently needs our attention. Please join me in celebrating a very important holiday on the Saturday between the Pachamama Alliance gathering and the POTUS election. It's Guy Fawkes Day, a day when you are asked to move your money from the corporate banks to your local credit union. Occupy your cash. It is also Vandana Shiva's 64th birthday. If you are not familiar with her work on behalf of Mother Gaia, I recommend that you see the movie Dirt. If you've seen this 2009 classic, perhaps you will celebrate Vandana Shiva's birthday by seeing it again. Better still, organize a screening in your local community. Next, I have an update from Kevin Hester on Guy McPherson's New Zealand tour coming up at the end of this month. The list of appearances has more than doubled in length, so I'm going to read all 9 events. If you want to see them in writing, go to Facebook, type Guy McPherson in the search bar, and select Professor Guy McPherson's Abrupt Climate Change Tour New Zealand 2016. Scan through the timeline and click on all the various posters that advertise these events. Thursday, 24 November, Gratitude Day in the USA, interview on The Paul Henry Show on TV3, 6 to 9 a.m. Friday, 25 November, Kauri Room, Far North Reap, Pukey Avenue, Kaitaia, 6 p.m. Sunday, 27 November, keynote at Unitech Campus, Point Chevalier, Auckland, in the Gold Lecture Theater, 3 p.m. New Zealand time, 2 a.m. UTC GMT. In North America, that's Saturday, 26 November, at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. Kevin says there will be technical support for live stream technology for this event, so I look forward to being there, even though I can't be there. Monday, 28 November, Events Room 1, Bill Gallagher Center, WinTech Campus, Waikato, 6 p.m. Wednesday, 30 November, public meeting at the Mangarara Eco Lodge, Patangata, Otain, 6:30 p.m. Thursday, 1 December, presentation followed by Q&A and meet and greet at the Davis Lecture Theater, Whanganui Regional Museum, 6 p.m. Saturday, 3 December, Renwick Anglican Church Hall, Nelson Region, 3 p.m. Monday, 5 December, Stop Out Soccer Club, Hutt Park, Gracefield, Lower Hutt, 6 p.m. Tuesday, 6 December, GBLT1, Victoria Law School, Wellington, 6 p.m. Before I share some not-so-random news items on habitat loss and other consequences of the illusion of separation from nature and from each other, I want to play another song by Here to Here, in which they again assume the perspective of a distant alien intelligence, like they did in the song Alien that I aired in the Alien Nation show on 1 July. Sequitur returned on 14 September with their song What If, after a 5-week hiatus to rescue Extinction Radio from the dustbin, in which they question the narrow-mindedness of the scientific paradigm and acknowledge other ways of knowing. Today I give you Earthlings, a clear diagnosis of the current pandemic of nature deficit disorder and acknowledgement of the agony of Gaia at human hands.
That was good.
Christian doesn't ask what would Jesus do, and then I don't know what a Christian is. And if a Buddhist doesn't ask what would Buddha do, and then I don't know what a Buddhist is. And if a Muslim doesn't ask what would Muhammad do, and then I don't know what the Islam is. And if a human being doesn't question his actions, I don't know what a human being is.
Oh, oh, earthlings, earthlings, our perception's gone astray. We think we own the earth and we treat her like a slave. Oh, oh, earthlings, earthlings, let's reevaluate our role in this experience and choose to change our ways. Oh, oh, earthlings, earthlings.
Oh, 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 you know that I'm a gonna sing it again. If a Christian doesn't ask what would Jesus do, I don't know what a Christian is.
And if a Buddhist doesn't ask what would Buddha do, then I don't know what a Buddhist is.
And if a Muslim won't ask what will Muhammad do, then I don't know what Islam is.
And if a human being doesn't question his actions, I don't know what a human being is. Oh, oh, earthlings, earthlings, our perception's gone astray. We think we own the earth and we treat her like a slave. Oh, oh, earthlings, earthlings, let's reevaluate our role in this experience and choose to change our ways. Oh, earthlings, earthlings, put aside your guns and bombs and armor trucks and realize that we are one. Oh, earthlings, earthlings, for we are here to love. Yes, la, 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 love in this trip around the sun. Oh, earthlings, earthlings. Oh, earthlings, earthlings. One soul, one life, one God, one love.
in this trip around the sun.
That was Here to Hear with Earthlings. You can find more of their music on their YouTube channel. The name is spelled H-E-R-E, then a space, then the Roman numeral 2, two uppercase letter I's, then a space, then H-E-R-E again. The name is a reference to the traditional wisdom that the greatest distance a human being can travel is the distance from head to heart.
You know, some people think there's intelligent life in outer space. Some people think there's intelligent life on Earth. Sixth extinction means human demise, 'cause the Earth will run out of supplies. Although we will dissolve, something new might evolve. Complex life might again yet arise. If not here on Earth, then extending our viewpoint, some life forms ascending. Some self-aware race somewhere out there in space, if the cosmos is never ending. Surely some sentient wit will survive to avoid an obit. The whole universe can't become one big hearse. If it does, oh well, then that's it. Hee-haw!
And now for some not-so-random news items on habitat loss and other consequences of the illusion of separation from nature and from each other. It's no wonder Americans are unconcerned about climate change, concludes the UK Guardian analysis of a report by Media Matters. Climate coverage in U.S. corporate media actually declined in 2015 relative to 2014, in spite of headline-worthy climatology findings, such as a string of consecutive shattered monthly all-time temperature records, and the consequences of these trends, such as resource and habitat wars, and the ensuing climate refugee crisis. Only extreme weather events that result in loss of human life or monetized property are deemed worthy of corporate media attention. Activists desperate for the taste of victory are pacified with crumbs from the master's table, such as the moratorium on drilling in the Atlantic, but not the Gulf of Mexico, and the temporary, limited support granted to the Standing Rock Sioux resistance to the Dakota Access Pipeline. These half-hearted responses to hard-fought struggles do not address the untold suffering brought about by the continuing rule of money, which gives rise to the doctrines of manifest destiny and eminent domain that empower the continuing pillage of our collective planetary home. These issues are all over social media, but absent from corporate news. What a surprise, not? The Dakota Access Pipeline has been fast-tracked for completion by the first of the year, no matter how much present and potential damage is caused to the land and the water, no matter how much suffering is endured by indigenous people from as far away as South America who have gathered in resistance, nonviolence so far, at least on the part of the protesters, but the oppression and provocation is escalating, and even those most committed to nonviolence have their breaking point. We all value peace. In fact, we need peace if we are to heal our separation and support each other in adapting to the new normal, but no more peace at any price. As part of my renewed commitment to the Pachamama Alliance, Sequitur will continue to cover this story. Back to the data from the Guardian analysis, the Sunday news magazines and the nightly news programs each aired a combined 73 minutes of climate coverage in 2015, down a total of 8 minutes from 2014, a 5% decline. On the other hand, the Public Broadcasting System, or PBS NewsHour program, aired 58 segments addressing climate change, 10 more than the other nightly news shows combined. Fox's coverage actually increased, but mostly to feature interviews with deniers. Most of the decline was due to ABC, which only spent 13 minutes all year, including zero coverage of climate science, no reports, no interviews, not even a quote. Most alarming was the decrease from 7 in-depth interviews on the Sunday news magazines in 2014 to just 1 in 2015. While there was some attention to the effects of climate change on the weather and wildlife, only PBS paid much attention to economic implications, and attention to public health and national security was virtually absent. The Media Matters study reported, quote, "The national security implications of climate change were rarely mentioned by the broadcast networks in 2015, even as a study in the National Academy of Sciences journal linked man-made climate change to the conflict in Syria. The Pentagon released a report detailing why climate change is a security risk, and President Obama and Democratic presidential candidates made high-profile remarks describing the connection that climate change has to terrorism and the rise of the jihadist group Daesh. Even as business and financial leaders warned about the severe economic risks posed by climate change, and reports by the bipartisan Risky Business Project and researchers at Stanford and the University of California at Berkeley quantified some of those risks, the broadcast networks were largely silent on the issue, with the notable exception of PBS. When the EPA finalized the Clean Power Plan in August, President Obama noted that climate change, quote, degrades the air our kids breathe, unquote, and made the case that limiting carbon pollution from power plants was critical to protecting, quote, the health and safety of all Americans, unquote. Yet the broadcast networks discussed the public health impacts of climate change a grand total of 5 times in 2015, with the subject never coming up on ABC or Fox. Close quotes. It is interesting to note that the sparse coverage by the networks was largely restricted to reporting on the Paris Cop-Out 21 and the Pope's encyclical, but that they remained virtually silent about domestic issues related to climate change, such as the Exxon investigations and the EPA's Clean Power Plan. Robert Glasser, the UN Secretary General's Special Representative for Disaster Risk Reduction, told the UN News Center that 90% of disasters are now climate-related. The toll of some 350 disasters, such as earthquakes, floods, droughts, and cyclones reported worldwide in 2015, caused more than 22,000 deaths, affected 98.6 million people, and cost $66.5 billion in economic damage. Glasser asserted that greenhouse gas emissions are already causing more extreme weather events, which, quote, are not only going to cause flood security crises, droughts, famine, huge unprecedented storms and extreme weather, and 100-year events becoming 1 in 20-year events, but they're also going to trigger people movements and be contributing causes of conflict as well around the world. The challenge is to move from thinking of disasters in terms of humanitarian relief in the phases immediately before and after to thinking about longer-term development and the choices we're making. Close quote. In an interview with Bridgeton News columnist Peter Boland, the Heat Is On and Boiling Point author Rox Gelbspan said, quote, "Nature's timetable is unfortunately very different from our own political pace. In a short time, we will see more crop failures, water shortages, uncontrolled migrations of people whose homelands become uninhabitable, and a succession of extreme weather events that will break national budgets. I think the central goal of activists should be to mobilize the countries of the world to begin to forge a plan to manage these climate shocks in a globally cooperative manner. Absent that kind of global initiative, we will see a startling increase in wars over vanishing resources and a wave of domestic repression by governments who feel forced to resort to totalitarian methods to keep order in the face of growing chaos." Close quotes. Similarly, Dr. John Wenger, senior lecturer in physical chemistry and joint founder of the Center for Research into Atmospheric Chemistry, reported to the Evening Echo, quote, "We may have a refugee crisis not because of war, but because of climate change in the next decade." Close quote. According to the Jamaica Observer, quote, "The overwhelming number of migrants that will result from climate change will far exceed the scale and gravity of any of the humanitarian disasters being experienced today," close quote. And it is unlikely that attitudes toward climate-related events will be any different than the response of the international community to the humanitarian crisis in Syria. While the practice of allowing economics to dictate political momentum and influence decision-making on a domestic and international level might be justifiable to some degree, environmental problems are becoming increasingly acute, and nothing but short-term pain for long-term gain will bring about the necessary revolutionary change towards reducing carbon footprint and creating a greener space. The United Nations Children's Emergency Fund, or UNICEF, estimates that 65 million children are currently climate refugees and has produced a series, three so far, of animated clips called the Unfairy Tales because, quote, "some stories were never meant for children," unquote. The clips feature three Syrian refugee children telling their story in their own words and are available for download. The National Intelligence Council predicts that increasingly severe weather and outbreaks of disease will sharply divide countries and groups over how to respond, reports The Olympian. Extreme temperature change, rainfall, and more tropical storms will cause humanitarian disasters, overwhelming relief efforts. Infectious disease epidemics will prompt a dramatic drop in travel to large parts of the world. While climate issues might lead to international cooperation, it will more likely cause discord. A few countries might invest in projects such as seawalls or desalination, but most will take few, if any, steps. An editorial in The Guardian says that the consequences of climate change, sometimes drought, sometimes extreme weather events, already contribute to political instability, to pushing hard lives over the border into intolerable, fueling the great flows of humanity across continents, and admits that most experts hold that the Paris aspiration to keep warming to 1.5°C rather than 2°C is already beginning to look as if it is too little, too late. The U.S. and Cuba will increase the flow of travel, commerce, and of information, reports ABC. Previously, Americans were required to travel to Cuba under the auspices of an organization and be accompanied by a representative of the sponsoring organization. But as of 15 March, individuals can travel on their own recognizance. Direct flights will be available from 20 cities for the first time in 50 years. Mail is moving and cruise ships and mariners are sailing. Collaboration on port security has been initiated. Educational exchanges have been authorized with a special focus on agriculture, entrepreneurship, health and science, human rights and law enforcement, and climate, energy, and the environment. The U.S. is ramping up its military preparedness with higher latitude enemies clearly in mind. Stripes reports that a training took place in late March where troops mobilized on ski and snowshoe, pulled sleds, set up Arctic tents, and operated snow machines. Participating from the U.S. were the Marine Corps Mountain Warfare Training Center, the 5th Ranger Training Battalion, the 10th Mountain Division, the 1st Special Forces Group Advanced Skills Company, the 10th Special Forces Group, the Alaska National Guard Canadian Forces Land Advanced Warfare Center. International participants were the Chilean Army Mountain School, the Finnish Jaeger Battalion, the German Gebirgsjäger Mountain and Winter Warfare School, Great Britain's 24 Commando, the NATO Mountain Warfare Center, the NATO Mountain Warfare Center of Excellence in Italy, the Slovenian Multinational Center of Excellence for Mountain Warfare, and the Swedish Winter Warfare School. Stripes also reports that the U.S. Navy had a 5-week training on weather forecasting in extreme conditions, temperatures of minus 25°C, with wind chills reaching minus 43°C. Two submarines were also on hand. The 1st Attack Reconnaissance Battalion, 25th Aviation Regiment, is the first to permanently install skis on the Apache, the Army's twin-engine four-bladed primary attack helicopter, reports the Army Times. They did it so they could land without sinking up to 27 meters into the thawing permafrost. The regiment also has Blackhawks and Chinooks. All have skis. They also cold-soak the Apaches in temperatures of -25°C, just to see how long it will take to warm them up and get the hydraulic systems flowing again. Answer, about 3 hours. Say what? Your tax dollars at work. Such use of resources makes it difficult to object to drive-through banking and fast food, eh? Thanks for listening to Sequitur on Expressions of Peace Radio, archived at panina.org. Rest in peace, all you departed, both loved and feared. And special thanks to contributors Peter Melton, John Michael's son, Here to Hear, Jeff Chapman Crane, Lisa White, Queen Reverend Mutima Imani, Takashi Tanimori, Zachary Running Wolf, Guy McPherson, Kevin Hester, Jiwa Woodbury, Benjamin the Donkey, and to Zimft for the Sequitur theme music. Until next time, this is Susan Livingston.
Connects us is one.